Let's return to a theme from earlier in the hour, natural processes in urban areas. We heard already about there's a chance you could eat things like dandelions growing out of sidewalks. Now let's talk about beekeeping in urban areas. There's something our next guest knows plenty about. Amanda Shaw is the owner of Waggleworks in Portland and the president of Portland Urban Beekeepers. She's coming to Ashland for the Oregon Honey and Mead Festival on Saturday and the Feminine Legacy Beekeeping Conference on Sunday. She joins us by phone from the Portland area. Hi, Mandy.
Hi, good morning, Jeff.
Good to have you here. I want to make it clear up front, the name of your business, Waggleworks. Waggle is more than a cute word. It's a real word for something bees do.
Absolutely. Bees use the waggle dance to communicate with each other. They tell each other the locations of food sources, water, and also places where the colony could potentially relocate to.
It sounds like a follow me, or you know, or come this way, or look this
way.
Yeah,
and it's interesting because not only are they waggling their abdomens, they're actually waggling in the direction of where the food or water or housing is located in its relation to where the sun is at in the sky. It's very sophisticated that insects have figured this out.
Wow, that is a lot to communicate for sure. So let's talk about you and beekeeping. What got you into this?
Well, you know, I got into bees about 5 years ago. I took a little class on mason beekeeping at a local garden center, and keeping mason bees is so much fun. I always tell people it's really the gateway bee. They're little tube nesting bees. They're native to Oregon, and I just had such a good time with it that I started studying honey beekeeping. And about a year into my studies, a swarm of bees landed in my front yard. And for me, that was a sign that I was ready to dive in and become a honeybee keeper.
That's pretty amazing. So when you go to the bees, that's one thing. But in this case, the bees came to you.
They came to me, yeah.
So you mentioned mason bees and then you mentioned honeybees in a separate sentence. Are mason bees, in fact, honeybees?
Mason bees are different. They are solitary tube nesting bees. So each female mason bee is fertile, and she raises her own brood that will become the next generation of mason bees. And they're known as the gentle, stingless pollinator. They have stingers, but they rarely use them. And I think they're gaining in popularity because it's a way of beekeeping that's attainable for pretty much anybody that has a little patio or even a small yard.
That's interesting, though. I can see why they're a good starter bee, because some of the other dangers and issues you have with bees aren't present with mason bees.
Right. And kids can get involved with them, too. They can help with the process. And they're really a lot of fun to watch.
I'm fascinated by the differences between bee species, though, because you said, is it basically each female raises her own brood? So it's basically like families, almost like families of mammals, in a sense.
Right. And with honeybees, they only have one queen. They have one fertile female who's raising the entire colony. She's everybody's mother.
Mandy Shaw, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She's the owner of the swarm-catching business Waggleworks in the Portland area and the president of Portland Urban Beekeepers. What do you know? The initials are PUB. You can join the conversation on the exchange as we talk about beekeeping further. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So tell us about a typical run of business at Waggleworks. What kinds of things do you do through the business?
Well, I do hive management for other people. I also do mentoring for new beekeepers who need a little bit of assistance getting started. I do presentations and workshops. I do a lot of volunteer work, like community outreach, and that also ties in with the work that I do with Portland Urban Beekeepers. And then I, of course, do swarm rescue and relocation. That's kind of the adrenaline-pumping part of my job.
That's the emergency call aspect of
your... Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's swarm season right now, so I'm always on standby. My car is loaded with swarm-catching gear. I'm always ready to go when I get a call.
So what's going on when bees swarm? Why do they swarm? What does it look like? What does it sound like? I guess is one of the bigger issues.
Yeah, well, it's loud. It's really loud when they swarm. And the reason that they're swarming is because their colony has overwintered with a healthy population, and they are swarming to expand their genetics. They're growing a new colony. And so to prepare for a swarm, they will make new queens. Sometimes they'll make a dozen new queens. And as those queens are incubating in their little cells, the mother queen, the original queen, will leave with about half of the worker bees. And they'll leave the hive. And what happens most often when I get phone calls from people is they see a ball of bees hanging on a shrub. And they think, oh my gosh, there's bees. They're making a hive right there. But actually, when they park themselves in a tree or something like that, they're just pausing. They've left the hive, they're regrouping, and now they have scout bees going out and looking for a new cavity for them to move into.
So the way you mentioned it, though, it's with the new queens, if the colony is perpetuating itself, it sounds like it's the old queen that leaves, the young ones stay behind?
Yeah, the old queen leaves, the young ones stay behind, and if the colony is populous enough, they will send out subsequent smaller swarms with some of those virgin queens.
So, if you leave swarms alone, will the situation resolve itself, or is the possibility that they'll end up making a nest there, a hive there?
Well, it's not common for honeybees to build a nest out in the open. They're meant to be, living in a little cavity. The good thing about calling a beekeeper to come and get the bees is that it prevents the possibility of them being sprayed by somebody that might not understand what's happening. They could be sprayed with pesticides just out of fear. And then they could also potentially move into a place that's not appropriate for them, like a chimney or the walls of somebody's houses.
So what do you do to get the swarms under control when you're called out in swarm season?
Oh, well, I just show up, and depending on the location of the bees, I mean, it's always nice when I don't have to climb a ladder to get to them. I just collect them, I put them in a container, and then I'll transport them back to one of my apiaries and put them in a hive. It's pretty straightforward, and once you've caught enough swarms, it gets easier and faster.
You make it sound pretty easy, but you know.
It is. I mean, the first swarm I ever caught, it took me a few hours because I didn't really know what I was doing. But now I understand the honeybee behavior better. And so I can work with that and use it to my advantage to make the process of collecting them faster.
Do you collect the whole bunch at once? Do you collect the key ones? Do you collect the queens? Is this part of what you do?
Well, if you see the queen, that's a bonus. And if you can grab her, they will follow wherever you put her. So there was one swarm that I caught that the bees, when I tried to bop them into the box that I had, some of them fell on the ground. And the queen was in the group that fell on the ground, and she started running away. And I could see this trail of bees running after her. So I quickly picked her up and I put her in the box. And the bees that were following her, they immediately turned around and went in the new direction that she was in.
All right. So that really is a bonus. So when you talk about picking up the queen, though, what kind of tools do you have? I can't imagine this is a barehanded thing.
Yeah, you can pick her up barehanded. You just have to be really careful because She's like a big ovary. You don't want to damage her. So just picking her up very carefully. They do make special like clips that you can grab queens with. But sometimes you just got to pick her up with your hands and put her in the box that you want her in.
Mandy Shaw, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She runs a swarm catching business in Portland called Waggle Works. She's also the president of Portland Urban Beekeepers, coming to Ashland this weekend for Oregon Honey and Mead Festival on Saturday and the Feminine Legacy Beekeeping Conference on Sunday. Questions, comments about beekeeping? You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So do you teach people to do swarm management too?
I haven't had somebody come out with me when I've done a swarm catch, and it's really hard to schedule that kind of thing ahead of time. Often when I get a call, I'm on my way there, and so I never think to call anybody to come and watch. But I have started a YouTube channel, and I also have a podcast where I talk about some of these things.
All right, Beekeeper Confidential. Yes, I did see the podcast. Yes, So I noticed one of your videos, too, talks about keeping track of varroa mites. These are the small critters that can harm and even kill bees. I mean, they're so small. How do you find evidence of them?
Well, so usually if you're doing a visual inspection of a hive, you won't see the varroa mites until your colony is at a high infestation level. And it's really a challenge for new beekeepers who are excited about getting into beekeeping and they want to do their part to help save the bees. But without an understanding of honeybee biology and their relationship with this parasite, they're often caught off guard at the end of season when their colony is suddenly sick and dying. And the varroa mites, they're tough. They reproduce inside of the honeybee brood. And so often you really can't see them until it's too late. Now, there are tests that you can do throughout the season to monitor mite levels, and it requires taking a sample of some of the bees in your colony, and you can do an alcohol wash on them, which unfortunately kills the bees, but it's a very accurate way of counting the mites that are on the bees' bodies. And so by tracking your varroa levels throughout the season, it gives the beekeeper an opportunity to plan and act accordingly depending on their management philosophies.
We she dropped off a call. Karen in Grants Pass asked a very simple question. How does one become a beekeeper?
Well, I would say start by reading lots of books. I started with the most basic book, Beekeeping for Dummies. That was a good one. And then join the local beekeeping association. Make some bee friends. Go to some of the meetings and sort of get a feel for the community and some of the issues that your local beekeepers are dealing with. And then if you can, take a beekeeping class. There's just so much to learn. Even after years of me doing it, I'm still learning so much every season. And I think maybe that's one of the things that makes it attractive to me. Is I'll never master this. I'll always be learning from the bees.
And just 5 years, you said, you've been doing it?
Yeah.
Okay, so it sounds like you've learned a lot though over that time.
I became a little obsessed.
So it was really intensive training course.
Yeah.
Now you're the second person this week, Melinda May, who wrote the book The Honey Bus, was on earlier to tell us to talk about on your web materials that beekeeping is sort of meditative. Why is it like that, do you suppose?
I think for me it's because you're in the presence of this awesome superorganism that could potentially harm you. You know, if you think about it, you're opening a hive that could have 60,000 stinging insects in it, and here you are bumping around in there. You have to really learn to calm yourself. And once you learn to calm yourself, you become very appreciative of the sounds that they make. You sort of get to know them and you get to know their personalities. And I tell you what, I could be having a really bad day or a bad week, but when I get to go out and spend a few hours with my bees, I am in such a good mood. It's like therapy.
Just kind of wipes away everything that you had before, it sounds like.
It really does, because when you're with the bees, you're in the moment. You're not really thinking about everything else that's happening in life. You're right there with the bees.
Talk about Portland Urban Beekeepers, for which you are the president, Mandy. Is this a mix of professionals and amateurs?
It is. We have a lot of beekeepers in Portland, and Portland Urban Beekeepers was formed almost 10 years ago out of the desire for a beekeeping organization that supports alternative hive styles, natural beekeeping practices, and we're an official chapter of the Oregon State Beekeepers Association. And really our goal is to educate not just new beekeepers, but also people who aren't beekeepers that just might not know much about bees. So we'll do a lot of community events. We participate in state and county fairs. We set up our booth and answer people's questions about bees. I think it's a really important piece of my beekeeping journey to use my knowledge to share with other people. That's always been at the core of my personal philosophy for beekeeping.
There have certainly been some incidents in Oregon, like the massive bee die-offs of a few years ago that were caused
The linden trees in Wilsonville.
Right.
Yeah.
So did this really spur a lot more interest in bees? It seems like we've been talking about bees in Oregon a lot more since that time.
Yeah, I think that it really has. And of course, social media has also played a big part in spreading the message that, hey, the bees are telling us that something is very wrong. And, you know, figuring out what is causing all these bee die-offs. We know that there's pesticide use, of course, that's a big driver. But then within the honeybee colonies, we have these parasites and the pathogens that are spread by the parasites. And so it's challenging, but I also feel really inspired because I get emails pretty regularly from people who are like, oh, well, I heard you on this interview and I have some questions. I'm doing a report on honeybees, you know, so people who aren't beekeepers are interested in it. And I think that gives me hope.
We have an email here from Danae, no town given, who wants to know, how can we get mason bees to nest away from our house in their own home?
That's kind of a tricky one. Mason bees are so industrious that they will make a home out of any little nook and cranny. Certainly putting a mason bee house and with the nesting tubes nearby is a good start. The good news is that they won't harm the structure because they're unlike carpenter bees. They're not chewing into any of the siding. They're just making little mud nests on the inside. So there's no structural damage. I leave mine. I have mason bees all along the south side of my house. And I've always had mason bee houses up with tubes, but they're so prolific that they have moved into the siding.
So they're using the tubes too and the siding?
Yeah. I've even found, you know, electrical cords. I've found them that they've nested or made a little mud plug in the plug part.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Cords that have been outside. So they just, any little hole, they'll find it and make a baby there.
All right. Busy bees at work for sure. And yeah. Lots of people making sure that they have a chance to be healthy as well. Mandy Shaw is the owner of Waggle Works in the Portland area and the president of Portland Urban Beekeepers. She'll be in Ashland this weekend for the Oregon Honey and Mead Festival, Saturday 10 to 5 at the Elks Lodge in Ashland, and on Sunday, the Feminine Legacy Beekeeping Conference, which we didn't have time to talk about. Mandy, thank you so much for joining us today on
the
Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much.
Good to have you here.